When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And I would like to cut outside the ship. We can see at this skyship port, there are a lot of kind of bustling locals around here that are here to greet like travelers. And there is a contingent of the ship that has rolled back some of the side-facing cargo doors in the Uhuru to unload whatever it is the Uhuru is able to load up with in Dominion. And also the spare treasures that they managed to loot from the Silver Bullet after their successful conflict. We can see carts that have been tied to the back of griffin chickens. And I've mentioned griffins kind of throughout this episode, but if we do have new listeners, they might not know that in the world of Sphere, the universe that Skyjax takes place in, there are creatures called griffins, which are lion birds. It is not that they are half lion, half bird. It is that, like a cat would be to a lion, a griffin is to a bird, in that this is simply a much larger version of this small creature. Griffins are birds that can grow to about 8.3 times the size of an average terrestrial counterpart, and also fall anywhere in between. And a few manage to even break that 8.3 line. So we see massive chickens that stand 7-8 feet tall, that have been tied up to carts that they pull this cargo along. There are a lot of Acheron locals here. We can see that folk from Acheron look very different. There are some folk that, you know, I think if this were the real world, we might say, those folks might be from Korea, or, these folks look like they might be from, well, Ohio. So there are people from all over who make up this local community of Acheron, kind of unloading the side of the Uhuru, putting cargo onto these carts. A question that I have for our guest, who I'm going to cut in and go, hey, everyone, welcome Big Bees to the Skyjax podcast.
Hey!
Hello.
What up, Bees? Can you please tell us, just so folks can find you, where they might be able to hear your other work if they just fall deeply in love with everything you do here and want to find more of your other stuff?
You can catch me on Twitch on my channel at big_bees.
That's BEAZ.
Yes, BEAZ. You can catch me Saturday evenings as I play a mass game on RF Chaos. You can catch something I did a while ago with the wonderful James here, The Price of Coal, on the One Shot Network. What else? Oh, I have actually working with the other Tracy on Ironetta Reforged. Mm. Got a lot of stuff kind of in the works. So just also follow me on Twitter at BigBees_BEAZ. And I'll just blast all the things that I'm a part of and everyone that I love and want to support all over my Twitter feed. So,
Bees, the question that I have for you, we know that Douglas is kind of a big man in this community, someone that people look to and respect. And we also know that Douglas is expecting the return of his son, Jonnet. Is Douglas the type of father who, you know, meets their son at the airport? Did you send folk along to, like, bring him home and have a big surprise waiting at home? How is Doug prepared? Where is he at?
No. Douglas is back at home. When Jonnet gets there, Jonnet will get there. He has a few things he needs to take care of, like normal chores that he's got to finish off, that he's like gotten ahead of, so that he can end everything and spend most of the night with his son. But he also is doing a little something extra, trying to get some stuff together for that as well. So he isn't gonna, you know, take the time out to go meet Jonnet. He did send some people that he trusts getting Jonnet and bringing him back to the place. Plus, he figures if not, it's only been a year, the boy should still know his way back home.
So, is there someone waiting with a sign that says
Kessler? Kessler party of one.
I think it's one of the members of the Durf family who we've established our families. Was it Dennis Durf?
I think it was Dennis Durf, something like that.
Yeah.
And this is the goober kid from the story. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Who they thought were stealing Kessler chickens, and Jonnet had a race to resolve it. They both kind of fell into some snare traps that Jonnet had prepared to cheat in the race. Mm-hmm. And while they were caught in those snare traps, had some time to talk and sort out their differences. So yeah, we've got one of the Durf kids out who is also, you know, probably similar age. We'll say probably around 17, you know, just a bit older than Jonnet. Mm-hmm. But Tyler, what does this person look like?
I think this person in the year that Jonnet has seen Dennis Durf, he's gotten taller. He's gotten like lankier and a little bit more wiry. Like I think this is probably like a luxury, but I imagine like a kid with glasses. He's kind of got like a little bit of tan skin, kind of like more curly, crimpy hair down to his shoulders, glasses, and he's in full like work attire. I feel like Douglas probably like yelled across at Dennis when he was working, like, "Hey, go, you know, like, go get my son." And so like he was like no fanfare, nothing, but he's there with, I guess, the rest of the people welcoming the ship in, and like he's got his hand like clasped over something, like around something.
All right, Bees, with that description, you're going to be playing Dennis Durf until we get to the Kessler household. So we see Dennis Durf got a sign that says Jonnet or something of the like on it. Got something else mysterious that is being clutched to that I guess, Bees, we're going to leave that entirely within your hands.
Can I real quick, can I just say that Dennis, like, he's already messing with him. Instead of Jonnet, it's Jonut.
Jonut.
Excellent work.
So you're standing there, like it's been a while, like things are unloading. Jonnet is taking his time to come off the ship. And I think it is probably a natural conclusion that Dennis might reach. It's like, well, yeah, Jonnet's been working aboard this ship for about a year. He's probably unloading a bunch of the cargo. He's probably working right now, completely unaware that Jonnet is a star watcher for this ship, an incredibly important role. So you might have been waiting there for quite some time, maybe even a little bit bored, when you hear a thumping and perhaps even what sounds like an animalistic roar of desperation from within the ship. I would like to turn to Travis. Travis, you have precious seconds that you need to find an exit so you can get off of this ship and maybe horribly keep growing. You have no idea when this might stop.
Am I too big at this point to fit through like a porthole or something? Probably, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Like, I think very quickly, portholes, like the only ways out for you, I think, are like actual doors or getting above deck somehow.
Yeah, then I think I'm just gonna like kind of crash my way out. It's all you can do.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I'm going to give you two routes. What you could do, you could try going up. That is going to be maneuvering your way, perhaps squeezing through certain stairwells on the ship. This will be very close by. However, there are smaller openings. The other thing that you could do is move through the cargo. All of the crew quarters are technically kind of in the cargo area of the ship. But to do that, you're going to have to barrel through a lot of this, pushing aside boxes, knocking things over, maybe causing some problems. But you do know that you'll be able to exit the big cargo doors on the ship and not have to worry about anything. The third option could be going out through the griffin cages. That are in the ship, which, you know, might upset some of Gable's big birds.
I think that the birds and I have an okay relationship, and they'll understand.
Well, depends which one.
Love this. So I need you to make a charm roll with two black dice. You are trying to appear non-threatening to big, giant predator birds. Well, one of them's not technically a predator. Lucas does crave human flesh, though.
No,
because he likes
isn't
it.
He the most bloodthirsty out of yeah. all of them?
Oh, definitely.
Oh, yes.
Now, may I guess that what you said, too black for that?
Too black because you are a horrible monstrosity right now.
May I get one blue because part of that is bird part?
I'm gonna say no this time. Okay. Normally I give you a blue die for bird stuff, but like the thing that you know about birds is like, oh, if they saw a scary monster, they would be scared.
Fair.
So that doesn't help you very much right now.
And what did you say this was? A charm?
This is a charm, and it is hard for sure.
So that is three, correct?
That is three purple.
Well, bud.
I'm feeling good about this.
And Cronin bird can't help you.
Right.
Cronin bird.
Cronin bird, baby.
I have achieved three successes and four threats.
Absolutely not.
What?
Wow. You're a goddamn liar.
On Earth.
You are a liar.
Nice. Bird for the win.
Okay. I'm proud of you, Johnny.
Four threats, huh?
Here's what happens.
My charm is good.
Travis starts scrambling through the ship, and part of the problem that you are facing right now, not only are you growing uncontrollably, which kind of makes ambulation like awkward to begin with, your feet and legs keep changing. Like, I think your hind legs are like bird legs now.
And I've definitely, as I was coming out of my quarters, the curtains got wrapped around my body. One of my feet is in a bucket.
Yes.
All of the classics.
And there are just like many animal cries of like, oh gosh.
Bless you.
Bless you.
Someone's allergic to babies.
Yeah.
Tough luck.
There are many animalistic cries of like stress and desperation as you are like thumping and thudding through the hallway. The threats that we are getting, there are members of the Uhuru crew who see this monstrosity moving down the hallways and go, oh no, it's a monster. I have to get it. So I'm going to say Wendell Barge is one of the things hanging off of you right now. The wings that are on your back,
stabbing
Wendell
at
has
you.
Like bodily leaped on top of them, is now holding you by the wings, attempting to wrestle you.
Oh, I ran.
And
I,
you...
I ran through a clothesline. There's a bra over my face. I can't see who's fighting.
There's a bra over your face and Wendell's face. So Wendell can't see who he's fighting.
All my bras are gone.
I think Wendell is like attempting to punch you to like subdue you, but not trying to subdue the monster on the ship. Person trying to get away was, of course, Pliff. Mm. But Pliff got scooped up on your big muzzle and rolled down onto like the back of your neck where Wendell is clinging to your wings and punching. And so Pliff is just getting repeatedly punched by Wendell's big, beefy arms.
That's exactly what a monster
suit,
would
please.
Say.
You can't fool me, monster.
Yeah, going through, obviously, because Pliff was like caught up in all of this, Jane has to be following quickly behind, and You know, this mirrors kind of the chase that Ormar had to the rowdy R's through the ship to Rocco.
Yeah.
Like maneuvering from the cargo area to where the birds are kept. But you are having to squeeze yourself and scramble through doors, pulling your ever-changing body through. Now you've got like kind of a beak, but it has teeth in it.
Oh.
You're like... You've got like kind of a feathery mane of these beautiful white feathers that are sticking out through your fur. You've still got these coyote paws in the front, but in the back you have like the talons, not the talons, but like the claws of a raven. And you're like just pushing and contorting yourself through as you've gotten bigger and bigger. I think now Travis is around like 300 pounds of beast, like moving through, getting larger. And then, of course, you get into like you come through, I think the bra, you finally manage to shake the bra off of your head. And you are now in the griffin enclosures where their cages are. And you are eye to eye with Metatron and Lucas. I think Flea has probably already been let out to run paces and fly over Acheron. Maybe even stay circling in the sky so the other ship in Orimar's fleet will be able to see where they've landed. But these two sort of make eye contact with this still-growing, horrific-looking beast who has just entered their area. Liz, he got 4 successes?
Mm-hmm. Wait, or what? Maybe it was 3.
It was 3.
3 successes, 4 threats. 4
threats.
3 successes, 4 threats. So 3 successes. How did they react to this monster suddenly appearing?
Well, sorry, gents. Sorry, gents.
Lucas has immediately done the math of, like, there are 2 flailing human bodies on this monster. The monster is bigger than the human bodies. If the monster keeps going, there will be more human bodies for him to eat. And it's just, like, real quick math, like, oh, go for it, man. Whatever you want to do. I'll just go with God.
Yeah, like Lucas ever the scavenger is just like, maybe this will mean I get to eat some people.
Get some
people
flesh.
Later
get some
on.
Flesh. And Metatron's asleep because he's a good boy.
Metatron, yeah, like turns around, like lazily opens one predator eye, looks at the situation, does that like little sideways bird blink, and then turns back to like stuff his head back in his feathers, like
whatever.
Above my pay grade. I'm not here for all that.
So they scooch aside.
Yeah, Flea's cage then is open, Travis. You just got to try and squeeze yourself through it. And for that, I'll need a coordination roll. This will also be hard.
You're doing this on purpose, making me play the game.
You're
and I don't care
role.
For it.
How dare.
Coordination.
That's what we pay you to do. It is what we pay you to do.
What was it? Did you say hard?
Mm-hmm. Yes, hard. 3 purple.
That is 2 failures and 4 advantages.
Okay.
Wow.
Okay. So you had 4 threats and 4 advantages. So what I think happens, there is a loud metallic thud as all of the pirates that have like jumped and clinged onto Travis that are like trying to subdue whatever monster somehow made its way into the Uhuru get like pulled off of him and basically knocked out, stunned, knocked to the side as Travis lunges through this ever smaller hole in the cage where he'd be able to fit his body through. But as he's moving, he like gets stuck and his body is too big and still growing now in this cage. You can see in front of you like the open port to the side where you or any griffin would be able to make your way out and just be free in the world, but you're stuck in this like little threshold. I want to know who of the crew is the first to arrive to this chaotic scene.
Or of us as player characters or other people in the Uhuru. Sorry to
you as player characters, I'm going to say. We could comically have other NPCs show up if you think, like Carlos says, like, I'll melt the bars or something like that.
Yeah, time to commit caramical-related crimes once again. No, I think Orimar, having, you know, got a magical inclination that something was very, very wrong, has probably been more directly pointed to where that feeling is coming from.
That makes
from.
Sense.
Yeah, he like drops the glass jar, like unintentionally. The startle of this kind of makes him drop the jar, and the bird probably is put out for a while. And he's like, puts bird back in cage. Signs, even though this bird does not understand sign language, I'll be right back. And kind of with alacrity starts stomping down the corridor. We get the kind of telltale signs of Orimar Vale's boots as it marches out frame and then back into frame in the bird hold. Yeah, there is a moment, I think, upon observing just the, I guess, like sphinx that Travis currently is. There's just a moment of no movement whatsoever while Orimar has to go through a number of calculations all at once on kind of handling this thing. Do we have to fight it? Well, it is in a cage right now, and it seemed to have put itself in the cage. But there are members of my crew who seem to currently be in mild peril, so let's extricate them first. Mm. So Orimar then wades in to go and rescue at the least Plith.
Yeah, I think Plith got knocked into a big, like, we'll say some tar or something. There's just, like, some sticky substance that's around
no,
these bird cages.
No, don't do this to him.
Yeah, no, I think, well, that's it. Wendell has landed in the big burlap sacks that they use to sweep up all the spare feathers. So Wendell explodes out of that, and Plith is, oh, what it is, because this is like the rookery. This is where the griffins hang out. Plith ended up like in kind of the sugary apple stuff that you're storing to feed the birds. So like Wendell explodes out and all of these feathers fill the room and fall onto Plith.
Mm.
And Plith goes, I'm fine. I'm fine.
Yeah, don't worry. Don't worry, Captain. I managed to punch that monster a lot. So probably doesn't have much left in him.
Oh, my God. Orimar ignores Wendell, goes immediately over to Plith by the collar hoisted off the ground.
Like, yeah.
That, it took a while to put all that apple puree together. And he's broken, like, three jars of this shit by himself. And there's a moment in the eyes of kind of like staring accusatorily.
Captain, I swear I'm not a monster. I'm not a monster. I'm just covered in stickiness and feathers.
There is the best human approximation of a sigh that Orimar can do. The crew knows that he's dead, but he's still trying his best to communicate like a human when possible. And just kind of full body flings Plith over his shoulder. Plith is a cartoon and basically rubber, so this doesn't deal him any damage.
Plith lands bridal style in Jane's arms, who we did establish was chasing after this whole cacophonous scene.
Mm-hmm. Signing back with one hand, clean him up. As Orimar marches over to the cage with Travis and silently sizes this thing up. How bad is this, Travis? Like, is this like, we were talking Cronenberg earlier, but is this played for horror here? Or do you look surprisingly noble, even though you're an unintentional amalgam?
I don't know. When James was describing it, it sounded pretty fucking cool. I think it's probably alarming. Especially the size. I think the size is honestly the most alarming part.
Mm-hmm.
And he's in the cage right now.
And your heart rate is going wild, mm-hmm. which is making my heart rate go wild because I'm empathetic to you while you still have my heart. Or Dref's heart, but you know, it was bequeathed. And there's just a bit of a panic feedback loop for a couple seconds until we maybe slowly realize that the cause of us panicking is in the same space. So there's just a full like minute of staring at each other down with panicked eyes until it kind of settles.
Lucas
slightly.
Is just pecking at you because now he's mad. Get out of
Who?
Lucas is just pecking at Travis because he's in space.
Yeah, I think there's a solid look at Lucas at this point of a kind of like we're having a staring conversation. Lucas, do you mind?
And Lucas is like, fine.
Yeah. Oh God. Yeah. Eventually, Oromar signs. Travis.
Yeah, and can you believe how sticky he got? I was shocked.
There is an entire loss for words. There is a palpable frustration that seems to be going across Oromar, and is as a result can no longer concentrate in trying to do sign language correctly.
And also, before you even bring it up, this is exactly what I meant to happen.
Yes, okay. So I think mid that, can I connect directly to Travis's soul as we've had before and have a conversation soul space instead? Is that fine?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
Hey heroes, it's James, your game master, and welcome to the mid-roll. Folks, we mentioned this last episode, but I am mentioning it again here. We got Big B's as a guest for this arc. I cannot wait for you to hear the stuff that we did together. It is so good. Head out right now and follow Big B's on Twitter. That is @biggest_B's, B-E-A-Z. Follow him, support him, love him. Heroes, I've got a brand new book out, The Ultimate RPG Character Backstory Guide Expanded Genres Edition. This is a follow-up to my first book, The Ultimate RPG Backstory Guide. Both of these books have prompts, activities, and mini-games to help you develop more complex and interesting backstories for your role-playing characters. The first one focused basically exclusively on the fantasy genre, but my new guide has material that is geared towards all of the most popular RPG genres. Whether you're developing a character for a horror, a western, sci-fi, or something punk, this guide has a special collection of exercises geared towards supporting those genres and helping you with your character. It is available everywhere books are sold. That's all major online retailers, major brick-and-mortar bookstores, and of course your friendly local game store or favorite indie brick-and-mortar shop. If you're going to pick it up, I do recommend picking it up from an indie shop. Just be sure to call ahead to make sure they can special order it if they don't have it on the shelf already. And if you do pick up a book, I would deeply appreciate you leaving a 5-star rating or review on any site that will review books. As much as I am loathed to say the name, it really helps when people leave reviews on Amazon. Not only does that push us up the charts, but my publisher pays very close attention to those reviews, and it is how I get new book contracts, which keeps a home over my head. If you want to pick up a copy for yourself, head to bit.ly/RPGBackstory2. That's RPG Backstory and the numeral 2, and that'll take you to the Simon & Schuster page, where you'll be able to find a good cross-section of the retailers that carry it. Before we get back to the show, I want to take a quick moment and thank some of our backers on Patreon. Benjamin Rose, thank you. Lenny, thank you so much. Gug the Goose, thank you. Quinn, thank you so much. Diana DeMarco, thank you. Spencer Hall, thank you so much. Kate, thank you. Charlie Heidkamp, thank you so much. Rachel Dutch, thank you. KD, thank you very much. Minchowski, thank you. Matthew Stafford, thank you so much. Rero Reads, thank you. Charlie White, thank you very much. Ina, thank you. Nadia K, thank you so much. Saturn's Father, thank you. Micah Lynn, thank you so much. Anna, thank you. Kenna May, thank you. Ellen Cornelia, thank you so much. Abby Schraber, thank you very much. Beans, thank you. And Dragon Girl Josie, thank you so much. A sincere thank you to all of our backers on Patreon. We wouldn't be able to make this show without you, and I am so very proud of this show. Now, with all of that out of the way, let's get back in the sky!
also being unable to try and actually communicate physically, Oromar and Ted goes internal. And I guess we both pass out.
It's just the idea of like being is like, okay, you and me, we're passing out. We're having a conversation. 3, 2, 1.
Lucas is just like looking at two people who are like a monster and a man, and both of them just fall down next to him. Mm-hmm. Which he thinks like, oh, they're dead. So he's going to start biting.
I see, yeah, like, I actually kind of see, like, this as a, the moment in Princess Mononoke where Sen is, like, just leaning her head against, like her wolf mother or brother. Mm. It's just, like, you lean into each other and both kind of, like, pass out. I don't know if Oromar goes limp because I don't know if that's how his body
Yeah, he's capable
works.
Of locking his body in place, more or less. So, yeah.
Yeah.
He rigor mortises instead of, like, ragdolls, I suppose.
Like a suit of armor statue, just like...
Very, very similar, actually, so, and probably just as eerie.
So think of how terrifying that is for everyone else, because Oromar just walked up to this creature and... As far as they can tell, just stared it to death.
Yeah.
And is still staring at it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it goes calm and it starts growing much more slowly, I think. Mm. While you're in this situation. And we step into the spiritual realm.
Mm.
Where we see the bright white, freshly born, quote unquote, soul of Travis Madigo speaking to the strange and unearthly greenish, blue-green tint toned soul of Oromar, a ghost that haunts its own body.
Mm. And once again, the description of a mansion held up by 1,000 spider strings of this inner space. And yeah. I guess we get an armchair. It's not a throne. I think it's just a very comfy armchair of this kind of like both simultaneously a soul orb and an outline of Oromar Vale, gesturing broadly to this soul orb and chimera outline of Travis Matago and says, "What the fuck is this?"
Well, I thought, I assumed that a griffin was an animal and that would kind of be enough.
Okay.
But it turns out it's harder to become one of those than, say, a standard size of a, of a bird.
Right.
I feel like there has to be some way in this mansion space, a way for them to see maybe through the windows of the eyes, the world of the living.
Mm.
You know, perhaps in an orb that they ponder between.
Oh, I like that this Knives Out looking ass mansion has like a nice floor to ceiling window.
Oh, yeah.
The kind of like the space outside capitalized.
And, you know, Oromar, you can see. Travis isn't wrong, exactly. He did manage to become a griffin. It was just hard.
Mm.
And it seems to have rubbed off on his other animal form as well.
Well, I do have a follow-up question. Where did you decide to start being a griffin? You clearly didn't start here, where there is clearly... obviously the most space for you to do something like this safely.
When I transform, I usually start to feel it around my feet, and it works its way up. And I thought it would be the same with this.
I'm not quite sure that answers my question.
Oh, you mean Travis in the Matigo. Ship? Oh. Well, I think if you follow the trail of braziers and buckets and draperies.
My
braziers!
My buckets!
You'll find it leads back to my quarters, which I thought was respectful of me.
How large is the griffin at this point? Is it like 7-8 feet tall?
Yeah, I think so. It's like large enough that this coyote's hind legs are getting stuck in this doorway that a human would go through to get into a griffin enclosure. So it's massive at this point.
You decided to turn into an 8-foot chimera in your hammock.
Well, I was standing next to the hammock, but more, but more or less, yeah, that's what happened.
As far as I'm aware, very few members of the crew know that you are a changeling. Changing into such a large beast in a public part of the ship where other members of the crew might see you sounds risky.
That's why I was doing it in my quarters. I thought
your quarters are in a public part of the ship. You do not have a bedroom. You were not confiding in bathroom Barry. I hope he's enjoying his holiday, by the way.
I got a postcard from him.
What?
Why would just Barry send you like,
yeah, wait a minute. Hang on. That's postcard. Too far.
It's a fantasy world. I do not believe that.
I'm sure the ranch sells postcards. He just didn't give you one. That has to have an obnoxious souvenir gift shop. Anyway.
Pens where you slide it and a little cow gets sexy undressed.
This is the second time we brought up sexy bikini pens on this podcast, and I think that's one too many.
It's an important piece of technology that we need to have firmly established, especially to new listeners, Liz, exists in the world that Skyjax has.
Think of the new listeners,
the new listeners.
They need the context.
Are they going to be listening to a show and go, oh my God, are they ever going to tell us if they have pens that if you move them, reveal a sexy version of a thing that's on the pen? Yes, it's okay, listeners. Yes, we do. That is a cornerstone, I would say, of our world building.
We don't didn't establish that we had pens.
I gotta say, as a longtime listener, you had, you know, captivating story, great actors, all that wonderful stuff, but it just didn't keep me around. I was about to go look for another podcast, and then you brought in sexy pens, and that's what cemented it. That was the saving grace right there.
That was a product of a long
brainstorm. That's why we have the retention that the Adventure Zone has been lacking between their arcs, is because we get sexy pens in there right away.
Right away.
I love the fact that this is mid-conversation and this is basically a shared intrusive thought.
Every aside is a some character's intrusive thought, I think.
Yeah, we're both imagining all of the fun we'll have at the ranch gift shop.
A number of spider strings come out from the earth and pull this intrusive thought just into the void. Okay. Okay, so you're saying that you decided to turn into an 8-foot beast in your bunk, which is just a hammock with a curtain around it, and you figured that was enough privacy when no one would notice you.
You know, when you say it like that, it sounds honestly less thoughtful than I imagined it when I did it. And, you know, I suppose you might be right. But I think it's safe to say that, you know, aside from the damage from there to here, all in all, kind of worked out.
Orma rubs the sides of his spiritual temples. Oh, God, the damage done to the ship. So I suppose then that this particular jaunt of yours was not so much a gamble as sheer idiocy. I see.
You know what? Yeah, that is exactly what it was.
Upon saying that, you both feel the thrum of a connection that exists between you, not one that exists within Dref's heart, but one that sits between your pinkies. The thrum of a promise made between you two.
which I think manifests physically as another spider string of glowing green light goes and connects the two.
It is a red green light. As we've established that the connections between people, the things that bind one soul to another, at least thanks to Margaret, can appear to us as red strings. This one binds your pinkies, as that is what you bound together when you made your accord. Mm-hmm. Travis swore that he would not gamble, and yet here he has done something risky. Feeling the thrum of this energy, I think, Oromar, you know, you have the right to sue, to say that this is indeed a gamble, and you might win.
That kind of level of pause and I have every right to win this gamble. And your body. But there are more pressing matters. Young Jonet Kessler is going to be doing something very important in the foreseeable. And I would like to make sure that that, more than anything else, more than wages, goes smoothly. I will take my one prize from you after. After the ceremony of Jonet Kessler's completes, then I will take my prize.
You know, I hate to say it, but you won fair and square, and what are you going to do? But now that I did lose, your boy's free to gamble again.
Travis Massigan, if your shenanigans happen to ruin this ceremony, there won't be a body for me to possess, because I will have torn it limb from limb.
But I...
Just so you know.
Thought that being a griffin would help.
And we step outside the spiritual realm into the physical, where I believe Gable and Jonet have arrived to this scene now.
I think there is a... I think the interjection of, I think it would help, Omar was like, we're done here.
And just like slamming the door.
Out of the body. Absolutely not.
I imagine, like, the scene in the real world is Gable poking the griffin chimera and then Jonet poking the captain.
Trying to keep, like, Lucas is obviously taking a bite and like pushing a dog's head away from a treat that it really wants. It's like half here and half here. Stop it.
I feel like it'll fix itself. They know what they're doing. Okay, we don't need to be here.
Just feel
okay,
like leaving your body's akimbo.
We should just move Lucas. We should just move Lucas.
But Lucas is.
Johnny kicks the griffin.
Oh yeah, we don't know it's Travis.
Why are you kicking me?
Oh, it's Travis.
Oh, talk. Okay, all right. No. Human tongue.
All right.
Oromar comes to you. Oh, you're both here. Like, he looks at both of you, doesn't say anything. He's not got the liquid in his voice to be able to speak correctly, but like looks at both of the two of you and kind of like nods slowly, being like, ah, you're here. And when did you get here?
Followed a trail of brassieres.
Yeah, a lot of bras. A lot of bras on the ship. Also, it was laundry day, but
Jennifer Brassieres is very upset.
Jennifer Brassieres.
Okay.
Add him to the death chart.
I can't help but imagine like the woman from Beauty and the Beast who needs six eggs. Like, that's Jennifer Brassieres.
She's always stressed out.
Yes.
Jennifer Brassieres. It's Jennifer's well-known information. Is the name of the shop.
Gosh.
No secrets here. It's Brassieres.
Yes. So I was like, okay, y'all squared away. What, Travis, can you undo what this is? And Jonet is kind of fumbling over his words. He's like, this is kind of like crunch time for me. Can you fix this? Okay. And he's gesturing to all of the griffin of the chimera.
Gable's like pulling like piles of like furry flesh and like trying to fold it off into like a smaller version. Like, go
yeah,
back.
Yeah, I guess I'll try to turn back into a coyote for now, as not to embarrass our young friend.
Yeah, I believe getting stuck in a door on the ship does satisfy the imprisonment of the island. So you are free to attempt to transform once more.
Okay. What's the difficulty?
This is hard and not daunting. You're not trying to mix something in, but like you're in a good deal of pain. This is still kind of new. You've only chimera'd a couple times before in your past.
And this is primal, correct?
This is primal.
Yeah, well, that's three successes and three threats.
Okay. All right, I'm going to allow you to choose. Do you want your threats to manifest in just being kind of worn out from all of the transforming, or do you want to be more noticeable to the people around you?
Being more noticeable is more fun, I think, from a perspective of someone listening to this.
Then... here's what you get to choose then. You can either stay a chimera, stay a coyote with bird parts, or stay huge. You are like now a coyote that stands at about like 6 feet tall to the shoulder.
So I'm either giant coyote or small chimera?
Or yeah, either giant coyote or coyote-sized chimera.
Oh, wow.
Give me that big puppy. Give me that big puppy.
Both are... very compelling.
Yeah, they're compelling images.
Baby, let's Clifford this. I'm gonna be a big dog.
Yes! My big dog.
Then I think we cut over to Denny Durf. Denny, who hears commotion on this ship. A lot of commotion. There is yelling. There are animal screams. There are griffin cries.
Feathers coming out of portholes.
My brassieres!
That is not what Jennifer sounds like. She has a beautiful voice.
I can't do Jennifer's voice.
Jonnet?
Jonnet hears the faintest hint of his name and then just like runs to like a nearby window, pokes his head out, is like, oh, it's Denny. And then he opens the window. What's up, Denny?
What in the hell is going on?
Don't worry about it. I'm back.
Denny, I think you can like circle around at this point to like the griffin hatch in the back of the ship that they launch flee from, and you'll be able to find like Jonnet is standing there with Captain Vale, with Gable, and this enormous coyote.
So I think what happens is I yell Jonnet, he hears that, pokes his head out the window to yell at me, but at that point I've walked around. So as he's yelling, I'm looking at him with his face out the window yelling, and I'm like, I'm here. And as he says, I'm here, he turns and sees the giant dog, and he's like, I'm here. I mean, what is that? What? Huh?
Hey, don't worry.
Oh no.
Don't talk. Don't talk to people.
I'm Jonnet's friend, and you're the only one who can hear me.
Oh, he's gone.
oh no, I kind of like the idea that yes. He gets frozen in place.
Oh yeah, he just freaks out.
His mind game on him.
Oh, don't worry. We can also hear him. We can also hear the big dog. Hi, I'm Gable. Nice to...
You're the only one who can hear them, too.
No, the rest... Travis, everyone can hear me.
Jonnet kind of, like, puts, you know, his hand on, like, the muzzle of the giant coyote, and then, like...
Puts his paw on Jonnet's mouth.
Jonnet falls over because that's far too much weight. And then from the ground, it's like, well, Denny, this... and meet the crew of the Uhuru.
Hmm,
Orimar, like, steps into frame, having managed to obtain somehow a gigantic leash from the
Emerald Berthold. Oh, please, give me.
And signs to Jonnet's friend, not knowing whether he can speak sign, understand sign language or not. Sorry, my hound got loose.
Yes.
So does anybody translate?
I mean, Jonnet would, unless you picked it up in the last year, Jonnet would kind of know if you, if you like, signed or not.
So he just sees this massive man just start throwing up signs, and he's like, I don't know what you're, what's he saying?
This is our pup. We call pup named Travis. Kind of got out, got loose, got it back. Don't worry about it.
Bad boy.
It's a very, very bad dog. Very bad boy.
And yet there's no rule that says a dog can't be on a ship.
Orma turns to look at Travis and signs, play dead.
That, I feel, is a great place to end our episode.
Oh, that's such a big puppy.
Oy, big pup.
Oh, Travis the big white dog.
Yes.
Good.
Oh my gosh.
Except Travis is a dog who grew so much because people hated so much. grew.
The anti-Clifford.
Campaign Skyjacks is a One-Shot Network production. For more information, be sure to follow us on Twitter over at CampaignPod for updates about live shows and other events we might be doing. In the universe of Starwall Odyssey, space is made out of the collective imaginations of all the thinking beings who live on various planets. These worlds are connected to each other through imagination. Common themes and ideas are strings between universes. And to get between them, people fly wooden ships that look like animals, which are powered by emotions. Also, people communicate with each other by contemplating orbs. The only way you can take pictures is getting stared at by a big psychic bug. And people have already declared victory in a war over the very concept of evil. But I'm getting ahead of myself. Starwall Odyssey follows the adventures of the hapless inhabitants of the Lucky Finn tenement building, who suddenly find that their apartment is actually a spaceship, and that they're lost in a sea of boundless imagination. It's an actual play starring me, James D'Amato, Mel D'Amato, Ali Grauer, and Drew Merzieski, as we playtest the No Kings system, which will hopefully one day be the Skyjacks role-playing system. It toes the line between weird and wonderful slice of life and high-flying space fantasy. You can sample the first 5 episodes by searching for Starwall Odyssey on your favorite podcast app, or get the whole thing by heading to patreon.com/oneshotpodcast and signing up for $5 a month or more. You can find more great gaming shows over at oneshotpodcast.com, like Design Doc. Join hosts Hannah Schaefer and Evan Roland as they redesign their first role-playing game. Design Doc is an experiment in public participatory analog game design. It's fun, it's messy, and you're invited along for the ride. Jonnet Kessler was played by Tyler Davis, who can be found on Twitter and Instagram at Tyler A. Dave. He also co-stars and consults on Showtime's Work in Progress. Gable was played by Liz Anderson, who can be found on Twitter at @LizAnderson_... or on her podcast, Paired. Travis Madigo was played by Johnny O'Mara, who can be found on Twitter at @JohnnyNBriefs or on his podcasts, Bill Buds and Dilettante Ball. Captain Orimar Vale was played by Nathan Blades, who can be found on Twitter at @PhantomArtsENT. You can also find them streaming on twitch.tv/TheNeonCaster. I am James D'Amato, your host and game master. You can find me on Twitter at OneShotRPG or on my other podcast, OneShot. The original music featured in this podcast was written, composed, and performed by Arnie Parrott. You can find him on Twitter over at @ArneParrott. You can find more of his work at atptunes.com. This episode was edited by Casey Tony, who can be found on Twitter at CaseyPony, or on his podcast, NeoScum. Our logo was designed by Fiona Shea, who can be found on Twitter at FionaPup. The World of Sphere was inspired in part by the music of the Decemberists, and Illimat, produced by Together Studios. This show uses a modified version of the Genesis role-playing system, designed by Sam Stewart and a team of talented professionals who were fired by the private equity firm owning Fantasy Flight Games.
To the strangers who've ever been kind, and once for our friends ne'er to rise. Twice to the dearest we're leaving behind, who know we can never deny the call of the skies.